ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. In Israel, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today saying the second stage of the war on Hamas has begun. He says it will only increase ahead of a broad ground invasion into the territory. Israel vowing to destroy the Hamas terror group, vowing the attacks on Israel 3 weeks ago will not go unpunished, but civilians in Gaza are taking the brunt of the attacks. Abu Dakal is an Israeli-American inside Gaza.
I think last night was probably the hardest for us since the beginning of the war.
Humanitarian groups say communication is shut off in Gaza and say more aid is needed to prevent more casualties. Volker Turk, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Inflicting wounds and trauma on hundreds of thousands of people does not help anyone. The humanitarian and human rights consequences will be devastating and long-lasting.
Tens of thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters turning out in London for a second straight weekend to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. This is ABC News. Today is the DEA's Drug Takeback Day. That's a nationwide way to dispose of old, unused, or unwanted prescription drugs. ABC's Andy Phil tells us why the DEA says giving them back is better than just throwing them out.
Accidental drug overdoses killed more than 97,000 Americans in 2021. It is a big reason why DEA is holding its semi-annual Drug Takeback Day this weekend.
A majority of people who reported misusing a prescription medication, they literally got it out of a medicine cabinet.
DEA Deputy Assistant Administrator Matt Strait says tossing those dangerous unused drugs at a takeback site guarantees your child or teen won't find it. Andy Field, ABC News.
You can find a location near you at takeback.com. At a renaming ceremony Friday in Augusta, Georgia, Fort Gordon became the last of 9 U.S. Army posts to be renamed, part of the Department of Defense initiative to redesignate Army bases named after Confederate soldiers. Dave Packer, ABC News.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different. You probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Family farm advocates in rural western Wisconsin are pushing back on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, as the livestock industry becomes more concentrated. But local officials are also digging in. Here's Mark Moran.
Hundreds of residents of Pierce County, nestled along the Wisconsin-Minnesota border, are concerned about a proposed expansion of CAFOs in the county. Danny Akinson, with a group called Grassroots Organizing Western Wisconsin, or GRO, asked county officials to put a moratorium on CAFO expansion.
That moratorium did not pass. In its place, the county decided to create a groundwater advisory committee, which will be studying the effects that CAFOs can have on our groundwater.
Similar efforts at halting CAFO expansion have failed in other Midwest and Plains states, where advisory groups have also been formed, and where CAFOs have the potential to pollute groundwater. Large corporate-owned farms say their operations are more efficient than small family farms and are simply meeting a growing demand. Akinson says advocates are trying to work with local officials to at least slow CAFO expansion. Known for dairy farms and cheese curds, residents of Pierce County towns such as River Falls, Spring Valley, and Ellsworth want to preserve the rural, pristine way of life the area is known for.
A lot of people come here looking for that rural way of life that you would not get in a place like the Twin Cities, for example.
CAFOs have been cited for a host of environmental problems as they expand across the country. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Mark Moran. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Here's a message just for the attorneys out there. So you passed the bar, joined a firm, or even built your own. Now are you finding out that you're doing more administration than actual law practice? Lexicon can help. Lexicon is a legal technology provider with over a decade of experience streamlining administrative tasks, like timekeeping, billing, and more, so you can focus on maximizing billable hours and increasing client satisfaction. Call 855-4-LEXICON or visit lexiconservices.com/go to learn more.
I was crossing the street when I met the love of my life. I chased after her. Nothing would stand in my way. Not the dog walker, nor the hot dog vendor. Finally reaching her, I asked, "What do you call that amazing smell?"
It's Gain Flings.
Gain Flings. My love had a name, but more importantly, it had a scent.
Fall in love with Gain Flings.
This is a special broadcast of the 7th Annual Cap Times Idea Fest, which returned to Madison on September 17, 2023, with leaders from government, business, education, social justice, and culture. Coming out of the tumultuous times of last year, the Idea Fest moderators and guests looked ahead to what the future could look like in Wisconsin. The theme focused on how we reckon with change brought on by the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other forces. The event was a hybrid of online and in-person events, and Civic Media has proudly partnered with IdeaFest and now presents segments of this year's gathering edited gently for time. Here now is Amy Davis with Alliant Energy, speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm Amy Davis with Alliant Energy, and I'd like to welcome you to the Cap Times IdeaFest panel session entitled Feeding Rural Wisconsin Using Innovation, Technology, and Collaboration. Today's discussion will center on new, collaborative, and innovative solutions to provide more choice, access, and fresh food to those in need in rural communities. A pretty relevant topic, we think, for September, as it is Hunger Action Month. We hope each of you today will gain an understanding of the challenges surrounding rural communities and food insecurity. And we also hope you're inspired by these innovative ideas that support solutions for this challenge, as well as take away a potential way to help you solve a variety of other challenges. I'll be serving as the moderator for the panel today, and in just a bit, we'll explain the connection between a utility company's interest in this topic. But first, I really want to welcome our panel of experts. Please help me welcome the president of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin, Michelle Orgay, the president of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin, Patty Habeck, and the director of Community Health Improvement at UW Health, Adrian Jones. I'm so happy that each of you are able to be here with us today and for sharing your experience and expertise with all of us. So now let's start with a little context to set up the discussion. Michelle, I'm going to start with you. Can you give us some background on food insecurity in Wisconsin? How many people in our state are food insecure, and what populations may be at higher risk?
Yes, thanks, Amy. And, you know, the numbers fluctuate and, you know, they spiked during COVID, but a lot of us are seeing those. I know our food bank here in southwestern Wisconsin is we're distributing more food than we did during the height of the pandemic. And I see Patty nodding, and I know that a lot of our colleagues all around the United States are seeing that same situation. But for a number, there are 427,000 plus folks facing food insecurity in Wisconsin. And that's information you can find by going to Map the Meal Gap. You can find information about specific counties as well. And folks can say, wow, like where are all these folks? And it's food insecurity can be pretty hidden. It's our neighbors. It's the folks that your kids are going to school with. And I know school just started, but it's everywhere. And, you know, it's hidden, and it's folks that you work with, you go to school with, it's your neighbors. And all these folks, everybody has aspirations. Everybody wants to accomplish all the same things as the rest of us do. Like we all have goals, but in order to achieve these goals, food is such an important element of that. And hunger makes everything harder. And facing food insecurity is one additional barrier. And not everybody has, even for food folks who are facing food insecurity, not everybody has the same access to food resources. And some of the folks that are facing food insecurity at higher rates are communities of color and single female-headed households, folks from LGBTQIA2S+ communities. There are a lot of different communities that face this, and also folks in rural communities. There are, according to the Food Research and Action Center, rural areas had higher poverty and their higher rates of food insecurity than metropolitan areas, 15% versus 11.8% for metro areas. And, this chart that you see up here, this is something that we put together because when folks say, oh, well, aren't there supports for this? Well, there are a couple of different types of supports. There are supports that are available through public sources, and there's also the food bank and food pantry partner networks. And we both, we work together and we work together in the sense that both are necessary. But when you look at this chart, it kind of points out why the public assistance benefits, SNAP, WIC, school meals, and things are so vital, but they don't cover everything. This chart here shows that, we have the different levels at which a family of four in Wisconsin are eligible for different programs and support. And we compare that to the ALICE, which is the Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed budget, which is something United Way does. And the survival budget for that family of four is $63,000. And that is above any of those thresholds for qualifying for different programs and supports. But the stability budget, which has incorporates higher costs for maybe putting away a little bit of money each month for emergencies, mm-hmm. and that's almost $103,000 for a family. And when you think about rural communities, they face, I think job opportunities are less prevalent in those areas, and mm-hmm. transportation can be a real issue. When there's transportation issues in a metro area, there are food resources may be closer. So even if you don't have your own transportation, you can access more transportation and also access food resources. In a rural community, it is much harder. And, for example, Clark and Vernon counties have about 8% of their households without access to a vehicle, and they're also beyond walking distance from a supermarket. So, and it's tough. We talk about you either bring food to the folks that are needing food support, or you bring folks to the food. So it's challenging to find ways to best support folks in rural communities.
Michelle, thank you for that. I know I was really just blown away by that chart that you shared with us even last week as we were preparing for the discussion today. And it's one of the reasons that our company here at Align Energy, our foundation, has a focus of supporting hunger and housing programs because of those very statistics that you shared. In fact, our foundation team is partnered with each of your organizations to help provide sustainable solutions to helpfully start to move people out of hunger insecurity. And those programs include, focuses on food nutrition, food pantries and food banks and so much more. So thinking of health, and maybe we could shift the conversation now to Adrienne, let's talk about what being food insecure means for our health. Can you share a little bit more about the health impacts those experience this issue might face?
Yes, thanks, Amy. And it's exciting to be on this panel, today with many of our colleagues and folks who we support here at UW Health. One of the things I want to highlight is a lot of what drives some of our initiatives at UW Health is what we hear in our community health needs assessment. And so to tag onto what was said in regards to, income and things like that. So our Dane County Community Health Needs Assessment is, again, it's specific to Dane County. And one of the things that came out in our most recent community health needs assessment is that the median household income in Dane County is roughly around $75,000. But when you disaggregate that data to our BIPOC or communities of color. When you look at our African-American and Latinx population, the median household income is anywhere between 32 to about maybe 44,000. And again, the average cost of living for sustainability is roughly around 54,000. So that really kind of paints the picture of what drives a lot of these inequities. And so when we're talking about food insecurity, we know that for adults and youth, some of the impacts cause chronic stress. And when you have chronic stress, you're more likely to deal with such things around diabetes and hypertension. In addition, we know that there's a huge impact on mental health. There's increased anxiety, depression, and also sleep deprivation. When we look at our children and adolescent population, many of youth who are facing food insecurity have issues with concentrating in school, may tend to display behavior that they're utilizing for coping. And so then you have those gaps in education as well. And then for our elderly population, of course, we know that food insecurity, of course, impacts their, you know, their longevity as far as quality of life. Some of the other things here is that when we talk about food insecurity, many of our communities live in food deserts. And so when we talk about what it means to eat healthy and access quality food, just like Michelle was saying, many of those grocery stores are not within walkable distance or close to public transportation. And so folks are either relying on, you know, like Walgreens or, of course, our food pantry services. And so here at UW Health, when we're screening our patients, we're screening for food insecurity under social determinants of health. And many of our patients are able to seek support from Second Harvest. And so that's one of the things that we're seeing here. I also want to highlight here in Dane County that we have high-need zip codes who are facing the largest insecurity. And so that includes, and folks may be familiar with 53713, 53714, 53726, and 53715. And so while these are the high-need zip codes that we're seeing as of today, this is not that much different than when the pandemic started. And again, just as Michelle said, we're seeing more increase of food insecurity. And a lot of that is related to as well to economic advancement. So having stable employment, access to transportation.
Adrienne, thank you for sharing that. You know, you're illustrating how layered this challenge is, right? I think if it was straightforward, we probably would be making even more progress than we have, but it is not. It's very complex, right? Yes. And I think about working at an energy company with our teams. You know, energy is a basic need. We all need electricity to fuel our lives, and we need a place to lay our head at night, and we need food to eat, right? They're really kind of the three things that we need to be able to start to be able to have that basis.
Yes.
And so while we've been supporting all of the organizations across the state to try to help, you know, with meals and delivering food, you know, the issue is getting more complex. And when you then compound that with more rural communities, it starts to even get more complex. And so it's one of the reasons that we really wanted to partner with organizations and collaboratively determine how can we start to tackle some of these critical and chronically challenging hurdles in a new way, right? So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do is learn, as we're all gathered here today to learn and share expertise, but we wanted to try to make a bigger and positive impact on challenges in the hunger space. And so that led us not only to the conversation today, but a new initiative that we're launching here at Align Energy, which we're calling our Rural Hunger Initiative. So Patty, I'll turn to you now. I know you were a part of the early collaboration process that we brought a group of people together, which you and Michelle were a part of originally, to help identify the challenges as we've started to list today, but also start to think about how could we develop some solutions. So could you tell us a little bit about the challenge that you all identified when we came together? I think it was about 6 months ago, and some of the specific challenges our rural communities are facing.
Absolutely. Thanks, Amy. And Adrienne, thank you for that. You know, what's really interesting is we can talk about statistics, and in Wisconsin, that hunger statistic is so high, but you have to get past those numbers and start thinking of the faces and the families that are behind it, because that is actually what motivates you to find those innovative solutions and to do the work day in, day out to make sure that you're finding things that sustain and make new ways of thinking of solutions. So gathering together with the Alliant Energy Group and with a number of different food bank partners about 6 months ago or so, when we were really having that opportunity to think creatively about solutions, the challenges that we find when we are dealing with rural communities, which are many in Wisconsin, is that we're really dealing with communities where there is distance, as already mentioned, between people and food, where there is distance between people and opportunity or people and help. And so we have to get creative. We have to know how to serve these communities.
You're listening to a recorded session of the 7th Annual Cap Times Idea Fest held the week of September 17th, 2023, with Amy Davis from Alliant Energy speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
I am the CEO of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. So I have both the Southeast, which is urban area, and that is one type of addressing the need, but it's very close. It's very compact. When I'm working in our Northeast part of our state and in our rural communities, I have to think differently. I cannot apply the same solutions. And that's actually a good thing because I can learn back and forth between the two. One of the things that we learned that we were looking at is during COVID, we found that accessing food from our typical sources was more and more challenging. But what was really interesting is our rural communities were actually stepping forward, and it was actually easier to access some of that food from and through our rural communities' supply chain. The supply chain was closer to the farmers and closer to the suppliers at that time. And being a food bank, we can act big sometimes. We can go and access food on a large scale. But more importantly is we understand how to act small and how to be in our communities and with our neighbors and understanding how to take advantage of the very rich resources that Wisconsin has to offer for the food area. So the challenge to that was for us to think differently. If we are going to really serve our rural communities well, it's not so much about what can we bring into the community. It's understanding what's already in a community, knowing what the needs are of that community and what the neighbors need, and then finding innovative solutions to be able to utilize those strengths of those rural communities and address hunger differently. So, for example, it would be easy enough for me to make a large purchase and bring a semi-load of food product into a small community and distribute it. The challenge to that is if I did that consistently, I may unintentionally be causing some harm to the local food system. So if I first understand the local food system and I understand what is already there, how can we as a food bank partner with what's already there and be able to lift up that community, we're actually not causing unintended consequences, but we're actually having the positive impact that we intend right from the beginning. So food banks spend a lot of time understanding who are the communities that we're serving, what are their needs, who are the neighbors in those community. And the only way we can do that is when we're in partnership and in collaboration with the communities. So we are absolutely aware of what's happening in our rural communities and how we can partner to have the biggest impacts. A lot of times our pantry partners or food partners in those small rural communities also need other things that are not food related. They might have access to food, but they might need help with infrastructure to be able to store that food or distribute that food. They might need help with transportation to even move it out from the rural center to other more rural communities. They might need help with understanding if there's any recalls or anything that we need to pay attention to, because we can get that information very quickly and share that. Making sure that we provide proper receipting. All of that is not so not so much lifted up or exciting, but when we can take those pieces and do that, we're actually helping the rural communities have more opportunity to go down and in and with their neighbors and provide that food support. So a food bank's role is really to serve in collaboration with the rural communities and with the resources, the strong resources that are in those communities, to make sure we're lifting it up and giving the most strength. And sometimes it's not the obvious answer.
Thank you, Patty. You know, I remember being a fly on the wall during that day that you all were getting together and collaborating. And as you were kind of listening or listing what I call the problem statement, right? It had many attributes, whether that is, you know, SNAP benefits don't really serve older populations, or this concept that you alluded to of, you know, in a rural community, there may be one lone, maybe small business grocery store, and sometimes food pantries, and that influx of food that you mentioned can actually compete with maybe one of the last businesses in an area that is preventing it from being a food desert and creating jobs in that community. So it was just such a great discussion and so insightful. I think it really was just the, you know, listeners today are hearing just a smidge of what it was that we all realized was really becoming the catalyst that we needed for combining our resources and working across organizations to set some goals and create this Rural Hunger Initiative. So really everyone on this call today are among the first to hear about this new opportunity. So based on this brainstorming with both of you and others that were in attendance that day, we were able to identify a few innovative solutions to combat just some of the challenges that Patty and Michelle and Adrian have shared with us today, specifically targeting food insecurity in rural communities. And so this is a collaboration with both Align Energy and our foundation and our food bank partners across Wisconsin and Iowa. And there are going to be some new and unique programs that are developed by this collaborative group to launch and start making an impact as soon as this fall, just in a few weeks. So I'm very proud, obviously, to work at Align Energy and to be able to share the news about this, a new initiative, which our charitable foundation is going to dedicate $1 million over the next 2 years to try to tackle some of these unique challenges. And the initiative overall is going to be designed to provide better access, more choice, and fresh food to those in need in rural communities. So we really see this as an example of how we think about trust-based philanthropy, which gives partners like you all and others who aren't on the call today an opportunity to try and do things in a different way, right? It's similar to giving these partners the ability to do research and develop on their own. And your thoughtful approaches are all going to be grounded in your expertise, the feasibility, and the willingness to try new things. And I know from spending the first decade of my career in the nonprofit world, it's not often that you can write a grant or get funding for something that hasn't been done before. So, Michelle, do you want to talk specifically about the program that you and your team, in partnership with Patty's team, are going to be working on?
Yes, thanks. You know, trust-based philanthropy should also, to some degree, it should definitely also apply to the folks that we're supporting. I mean, we should be able to trust the folks. We should be trusting the folks that we're aiming to be providing food support to. We should trust them to make some choices, right? And food banks are often we are often torn between, or like have this balance between efficiency and effectiveness. And everybody loves the efficiency of food banks, and it's great. But, you know, there's a point where we also have to figure out, like, is it being effective? And so if you've got 100 folks, you could be really effective by having 100 different solutions to each, you know, each person. That's not necessarily efficient. And efficiency could be we're going to go out to this rural community and we're going to be there at this one point, this one day. And it's really convenient for us, and being very food bank centric. And we're going to go there, and everybody come here to our chosen day, time, location, and we've got food that we've chosen, that this is what we have available, and that's efficient. But there's, you know, and it's not a one size fits all approach. So that may be great for some folks, and so we have, you know, trying to figure out the balance. And you know, when Patty and I were setting up the problem statement, if you call, you know, if you will, it's okay. Well, thinking in like maybe traditional food bank terms, let's pack up boxes of things and let's get them out individually. If it's like, that's not that much better, and it's not efficient. So how can we be the most efficient with our effective programs? And you know, innovation is we're not doing it to be fancy or to be innovative, but we're trying to find new ways to do things. So When we're thinking about how to support a community, how to listen to a community, and we still have a lot to learn. Part of this the funding that Alliant Energy Foundation is providing is really smartly, like feasibility, you know, just launching into something that we think might work. We, Patty and I and other folks have, and our teams have thought about this for a while. There are other groups around the country doing versions of this for their communities. And we want to build on those things that other folks have already learned and see what will work for our communities. You know, this is focusing on individuals, but it is about this, you know, looking at how to provide support to folks in rural communities. The idea is that we would provide a card in a convenience term, like instead of like vouchers for a specific store or chain, our goal is to have a card, like a food debit card, if you will. Again, we don't have all the things figured out. But an individual family would have this card. It would provide a certain amount of resource access to, we're hoping to any grocery store, any supermarket, any convenience store, because, you know, especially even with lack of transportation, you don't know which community you're going to be in. And so we don't want to make it so specific to a community or a certain chain that you can go and you get the food that you want, that, you know, it's produce, it's dairy, it's certain things. It's not just a straight up cash card. It's a card that is specific to foods that we've types of foods, not specific foods that we've chosen. So it gives us dignity of choice. It gives us individual opportunity. It gives convenience. And it's much more efficient than us packing up boxes, putting them on our trucks and getting out there. And like, it might not even be what folks find to be useful to them. So, you know, we have to figure out the best way to do this, who it's going to be best for. And we also think that this, to Patty's point of supporting communities, we want to strengthen local food economies and strengthen local communities. And this is a way to be able to have the money continue to be spent in those communities. And, you know, we don't want there to be fewer supermarkets, fewer grocery stores. And we wouldn't be intentionally bringing in a truckload of food that would compete with a place. We want to complement the things that are already going on. So our goal is to figure out the best way to do this. And then if other folks and other food banks want to do the same thing, like just share it with everyone. But so many things to figure out in the ways to make this work. And ultimately the goal is what's best and what we hear from the folks who are going to be the users of the system that we are hopefully co-creating with communities.
This is a recorded session of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest, held the week beginning September 17th, 2023 in Madison. More to come after these messages.
In touch with the City of Lakes. In touch with you. This is Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
You're listening to a recorded session of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest held the week of September 17th with Amy Davis from Alliant Energy, speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
Michelle, I think that's great. I like what you said there about the individual and choice, right? And you think about that dignity that comes with having choice and even just the convenience of this idea that it could bring to people and the control. I mean, there are all manner of things that guide our food choices, whether it's cultural traditions. And so some foods might not be right for some families or audiences. It could be dietary. As Adrian was talking, dietary needs that different people have. So this concept you all are starting to, it's in the incubator, if you will, is going to bring a lot of that. And these aren't challenges that we even talked about yet in the 30 minutes or so that we've been talking. So I'm excited about this concept for sure. Patty, I want to turn back to you, if I can, for a minute. Could you share with people who are watching today a little bit more about the process we did to get all the ideas out on the table and talk through new ways and kind of, you know, how we got to this kind of idea of how we could accomplish this?
Absolutely. It was a great time. It gave an opportunity for us to slow down, stop, and communicate with each other to compare thoughts and ideas. So what really happened is Alliant chose a kind of a centrally located site, which was in Dubuque, kind of a fun food community to be in, and invited Michelle and I from Wisconsin, as well as some Iowa food banks together. And the process was a facilitated process where we went through a series of questions. We went through some thinking. We had the opportunity to make some pitches, if you will, to each other and also to Alliant to start thinking about this was a gift of time, truly, to not only share information, but to have this gift of time to think through the innovation. Sometimes, you know, you get as leaders of and in my case, a food bank, Adrian's case, you know, working day to day, day in, day out with individuals that have health concerns, you get lost in that day to day, and to pull back and find that time to have that thinking time to put new pieces together doesn't really happen unless you're kind of in a situation. And that's what we were invited into through this process. We were able to share ideas and hone ideas. And if you notice what you're being presented with today, or what we're talking about today, Amy, is this was something that Michelle was thinking about. This was something that I was thinking about it through the Eastern side. This is something we've had conversations with other people. It was not necessarily a new idea, but the time to slow down and talk it through and to see, was it feasible to take it to the next step? We know that there's versions of this out there. So as people are listening and they're thinking, oh, I've heard about this, I've seen something like this, I have an idea. Those are the things that we are now in that stage of wanting to gather and collect from communities and from people and from other companies that might already be doing this. And what Alliant has given us is the opportunity to slow down and take that time to collect all of those things, to see what's already out there rather than rushing in to create something new. And that's all very exciting to us. And where that benefits ultimately, and I really want to be clear about this, this all started because the voice of the people with lived experience in food insecurity has shared with us very, very clearly that they want to use the food systems that are available to everybody. And they want to select the food that is important to them. And they want to select nutritious food, but might need certain types of nutritious food because of limitations in their own household infrastructures. And so all of this is kind of a bubble up idea that we're all adding pieces and parts to. And in the end, we're hoping that what we come up with will be that innovative solution that will help. It'll be another tool in the toolkit, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, we need all the tools we can get. You know, Patty, if I can stay with you for just a minute before we move on, could you share a little bit about, you know, you mentioned the collaborative process and that you and Michelle had similar ideas, but now we're kind of coming together to try to tackle this as one. How are you thinking about how we'll measure this and when we might even start to see some positive change and what that change could really mean for the families and communities that this is going to serve?
Absolutely. So we are at the very beginning of doing the formal portion of this, which is we're going to put a little request out to the community, and I mean very broadly that we will see what our scope and reach is for the RFP, but we have worked on creating an RFP. We will put it out and we will see who is doing this work, who can help us come in and help coordinate some of the information that we expect will be coming in, how we can put that together. We're hoping that that is something that we do over the next 6 months or so. And then once we have some idea of what's out there, starting to go through it and vetting it and thinking through on what will be most helpful for our communities in our rural communities, both in Wisconsin and quite honestly, other rural communities in states near and far, how we might be able to use that information. We expect all of this starting to really come together in the next calendar year, early in the next calendar year, so that we can put together the plan and start rolling it out. We know that such a card exists in some format. It might not be exactly what we're imagining. Once we get that information back, we'll be able to say, this is what's out there. This is what we can do with what's currently out there. And this is where we'd like to take it. So we see it as multi-phase, but we'd like to get it rolled out as quickly as possible. So we're hoping that what we discover is we can easily take something that exists, start utilizing it, and tweak it as we go along.
That's great. Thank you, Patty. You know, you mentioned multi-phase, and we're highlighting today the card concept that you both are a part of, but our larger Rural Hunger Initiative is also multi-phased in that we're going to be piloting two other projects with food bank partners. One, to explore the idea how we could expand school pantries, where you have food pantries in schools, which often are a convening place in many rural communities, as well as ag partnerships. I can't remember if it was Patty or you, Michelle, that talked about, you know, during the pandemic, sometimes the rural communities actually had faster access to food because locally there were farmers there. And so how can we think of new ways to partner with our farm communities and farmers to actually get fresh, nutritious food that's grown locally to the folks that are in need as well? So we'll be highlighting those across the next 2 years as well. Adrian, I'd like to turn back to you now before we take any questions that have come in from our viewers today. I was really struck about your thoughtfulness in the opening comments that you shared about the whole person and how you're now even screening for food insecurity as you see new patients. Can you speak to how UW Health has leveraged collaborations and creative solutions for your patients? I'm thinking, you know, not only about your comments of the whole person, but would just so appreciate your perspective on how that intersects with supporting communities and food insecurity.
Sure. I want to probably highlight two things. One, of course, at our hospital, we do have access to a food pantry, especially for our patients who are discharged and need support with being able to prepare meals, whether they've had a procedure done or things like that. I also want to highlight a particular program that comes out of our Office of Population Health that fits under our reproductive justice health priority area. And that program is a social determinants of health program that's really around a closed loop referral care coordination system. And many may be familiar with it, I'm not sure, but it's called ConnectRx. And so the ConnectRx program is an initiative that's under the Saving Our Babies umbrella initiative, which is a collaboration under the Dane County Health Council, which consists of some of the major health systems here in Dane County, as well as United Way of Dane County, Public Health Madison, Dane County, and Madison Metropolitan School District. And so with this program specifically, we are screening all Black birthing patients, or screening in general, we're screening all patients for social determinants of health. This particular program is for Black birthing patients who screen positive for one or more social determinants of health on our social determinants of health screening wheel. And so if patients are interested, they can receive a referral to the ConnectRx program, in which that referral goes to our community health worker team. And the community health worker supervisor basically triages some of those referrals. And then our community health workers are able to support patients through pregnancy and up to 1 year postpartum. And many of our patients who are being screened and who are part of this program, one of their highest needs are around food insecurity. And so our community health workers are able to actually drop off food to the patients wherever they feel most comfortable. And I think one of the great things about that is we really think about things from how do we meet people where they're at? And I feel like this is one of the major ways we are able to do so and to help reduce things around chronic stress and improve birth outcomes for our Black birthing patients. And then, of course, that's that life, you know, that lifespan perspective. And so we know if the birthing patient is good, more than likely we'll have a positive outcome for baby as well.
Thanks for sharing that, Adrian. I think one of the other things that, you know, for folks that are listening in today may not know just how long you all have been at this, similar to Patty and Michelle, this is nothing new for UW Health. And I think one of the things that as I was doing my homework to prepare for the conversation today, you all are doing this at all levels of UW,
yes,
right? I mean, from the family medicine provider, I think there's a pilot they're working on with Quick Trip maybe to figure out how to get easy access to fruits, to ConnectRx, to funding an income pilot with the Madison Forward Fund. You guys are all over this trying to, you know, just as you think of the whole person, you're not looking at, I think maybe Patty said tools in the toolbox. You're looking at multiple tools here to see how you can make a difference in this area.
Yes, from our tiniest babies to, you know, our elderly population.
Thank you so much, Adrian. I think these are just all excellent examples of collaboration and innovative thinking to really create some meaningful solutions for this important challenge that we now know as a result of this conversation today that many are challenging, right, or are facing today. So I can't just say enough how wonderful it's been to talk about all the partnerships that we have with each of your organizations and others. And to bring the topic and focus of rural hunger with a larger audience. You know, as I think about some of the key takeaways of this, I think that they not only apply to this initiative, but could be used more broadly as we think about tackling lots of other issues, right? Like the first place to start is, you know, what's already in our communities? How are we working with those assets and resources and not fighting against them, but elevating them and amplifying them and learning the true personal needs of each individual and community that we're serving? So that's one thing that I'm going to take away. I think the other is to use creativity. Patty, thanks for highlighting that gift of time to pause. You all are so busy. I can't even imagine what it took to get you all on the schedule today. So we thank you for that. But to pause and have that time for creativity, I think about that and how we all need to tackle problems. We're better when we can use those creative juices instead of operating from that place of scarcity that tragically many of the people that need this are working from a place of scarcity. So that's important. And then obviously collaboration. It's clear that each of you are no strangers to one another, but certainly if I had the 6 degrees of separation game, I'm sure it would multiply out by many factors by the passion that you each bring to your roles. And, you know, I think that we're just very, very fortunate to have you all working towards these challenges. And I know with you all at the helm, we're going to be successful. So I just want to thank you all today for your time. I want to thank all of the folks that were able to join us live and for those who will be able to watch this replay. It's just been a pleasure to guide this conversation and to hopefully be a small part of addressing rural hunger across Wisconsin. So with that, I want to wish you all a wonderful day and thank you so much for your time.
This is a special broadcast of the 7th Annual Cap Times Idea Fest, which returns September 17, 2023 to Madison with leaders from government, business, education, social justice, and culture. The theme focused on how we reckon with the change brought on by the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other forces. Civic Media proudly partnered with Idea Fest and now presents segments of this year's gathering edited gently for time. In this session, Paul Fanlon, editor and publisher of the Capital Times, introduces the topic of second chances, such as the reinstatement of federal Pell Grant eligibility for incarcerated people, with a focus on urgently needed community support and reforms for higher education in prisons. With moderator Molly Lasagna, Ascendium Senior Program Officer for Education Grantmaking.
Good evening, everybody. It's great to see all of you here. I'm Paul Fanlon, the publisher of the Capital Times, and we're just delighted to be here in South Madison for this session, which is part of our 7th annual Cap Times Idea Fest. This is the second year we've been at this venue, Madison College's Goodman South Campus, and Dr. Jack Daniels is here tonight. We'd like to thank him for last year and for this year as well for hosting us. Tonight's session is, as I was talking with the panelists before, not only important, but is especially timely, as you'll hear. I need to thank our many sponsors, starting with Ascendium Education Group, which designed tonight's session and is its sponsor. So thank you to Ascendium for putting this on. I'll go through a long list of sponsors just to touch on them. Our presenting sponsor for the entire event is Epic Systems again this year, for which we're very grateful. Our major sponsors are HealthX Ventures and Exact Sciences. Other sponsors include Madison Gas and Electric, Alliant Energy, University of Wisconsin-Madison, Godfrey Kahn Law, Hessenix, the University Research Park, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, Cargo Coffee, Leopold's Books Bar Cafe, Madison College, the aforementioned, and Forward Theater, and finally, Youngblood Beer Company. Our partners include the Wisconsin State Journal, Madison.com, and Civic Media. Just a quick word about the Capital Times. When you think of the Capital Times, we hope you think of excellent local independent journalism, news coverage, and we hope you also think of our informed progressive opinion, but I hope you also think of our EVU Foundation. Our foundation has made a major record, established a major record over the last 50 years supporting bricks and mortar project like this building and the Black Business Hub nearby and other buildings in South Madison, and also has supported programs throughout South Madison, throughout the community for a long time. So, on to tonight's program. This year's reinstatement of federal Pell Grant eligibility for incarcerated people is a major step towards equity and access to higher education. The focus of tonight's conversation is on two questions. What role can community-based organizations play in strengthening supports for individuals reentering their communities? And two, given Pell Grant reinstatement, what reforms are most urgent for higher education in prisons? Our moderator tonight is Molly Lasagna, Ascendium Senior Program Officer for Education Grant Making. And instead of me double introducing the panel, I'm just going to turn it over to Molly so she can take it from here and have the folks introduce themselves. Again, thank you so much for coming out tonight. Thank you.
I'm Molly Lasagna. I'm a senior program officer at Ascendium. If you've not heard of Ascendium before, we are a post-secondary education funder, and we fund really at the heart in upward mobility for learners from low-income backgrounds. That looks like a lot of different things at Ascendium, but one of the things that it looks like is an investment in incarcerated adults who are working towards post-secondary success. And I say post-secondary success because I think one of the things to say and one of the things that we're going to talk about tonight on the panel is what that success looks like for this population of students, right? So are we talking about degree completion? Are we talking about meaningful employment? Are we talking about economic mobility? Are we talking about creating generational wealth for their own families and communities, right? It's a whole ecosystem of success that we want to push ourselves to think about when we think about this population of students. So part of the reason that we're here tonight to have this conversation with this incredible panel, and I'm going to try to talk as little as possible, because we have an unbelievable array of wisdom on the panel tonight, folks who represent all kinds of different inputs into that ecosystem of success or incarcerated individuals, currently and formerly incarcerated individuals. So I don't want to take up any more air space than I need to. I will just say one thing quickly before I turn it over to the panel. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask each member of the panel to introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about their work, tell us a little bit about, like I said, sort of how they are, which star in that constellation of supports they represent for incarcerated students, currently and formerly incarcerated folks. So I'll ask them to do that, each of them. And then I've got a couple of kind of big guiding questions with which Paul teed up at the beginning. But then we'd really love to open it up to questions.
You're listening to a special broadcast of portions of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest, which returns September 17th, 2023 to Madison. Moderator Molly Lasagna, Ascendium Senior Program Officer for Education Grantmaking, continues with community leaders about community support and reforms for higher education in prisons.
Well, good evening, and thank you all for coming out tonight. I'm Ruben Anthony, the President and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Madison. The Urban League of Greater Madison is one of the oldest civil rights organizations in the nation. We've been around since 1910. Here in Madison, we've been around since 1968. So we do a host of things which will come out even more during our discussion. But I come to this discussion recognizing that the Urban League of Greater Madison is only one part of the ecosystem of supportive services that are necessary for allowing formerly incarcerated people to find their way back to useful lives in society. There are so many things needed to help them put their lives back together that it requires all of us working together. And this discussion today is, you'll see that many of us are doing different aspects in this ecosystem. Depending on when one is incarcerated, the society that they are returning to can be much different than it was when they went in. Some people went in before the internet. Some people went in before social media. Some people went in before cell phones. So when they come out, it's a changed society. So they really need a lot of adjustment. Sometimes their families have moved on and have different lives. They have fallen behind in child support, so they need help with those types of things. They need assistance reuniting with their families. The prison systems today often send formerly incarcerated people back into society, not with 21st century skills. Most of the time, they need to update their skills. Many of the times when they go into the workplace, We need to ban the box. We need to stop asking questions about incarceration and give them a fair shot. They will need housing, and we need landlords to be fair. Many of them may have to go into restricted spaces. Regardless of their background, they need housing and they need our support. Many will need spiritual, social, and psychological support. They may need access to different therapies. They may need a second chance to get reintegrated back into society. It is to their benefit and our benefits that we help them integrate back into society. If we don't, they may be forced into conditions that may cause them to reoffend because of houselessness, or they may turn to drugs, or maybe they may turn to alcohol. As a service provider, we must continue to talk about how we can work together to help them transform their lives for the betterment of society. It is all about giving people a second chance in this life. And so we'll talk some about that today on this panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Anthony. You touched on so many incredibly important and meaningful pieces of this conversation. And I'm excited to continue to flesh out what we mean when we talk about this sort of ecosystem of support for this population of students. And a few minutes later in the panel, we'll talk a little bit more specifically about what it really looks like from a higher ed perspective, right? So we'll talk a little bit about the ban on Pell Grants and the return of Pell Grants for incarcerated students. But I think important to start with remarks from Dr. Anthony and from this sort of larger perspective on, because we know, one thing we know about higher ed in prison, and I think anybody on this panel who's been in a classroom in a prison will tell you this, is that it's much more than just those textbooks in those classrooms, right? There's a lot more going on in these programs to really help folks have a second chance at success, right? In some cases, a first chance at success, like, let's be honest.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this panel on this wonderful topic of discussion. My name is Dr. Kimani Alford. I am the Associate Vice President of Madison College, Associate Vice President of Student Access and Success at Madison College. Let's clear that up. So I've been in higher education probably about 23, 24 years. I began my journey in Milwaukee. And during that time, I was surrounded by many individuals, in the sense that were looking for a second chance at life, that were experiencing life, different challenges, different situations, different decisions that landed them in different journeys or on different journeys. While at Madison College in 2019, the opportunity to participate in the Second Chance Pell program arose. And at that time, we were really looking at ways to diversify our mission and really attach ourselves to meaningful initiatives and meaningful strategies that will really transform lives. And at that time, I ran to our president and was like, hey, Dr. Daniels, here's an opportunity for us to do X, Y, and Z. And it became a passion for me. It was one that we had knew of. That was occurring within higher education, but it was one that we wasn't partaking in. So when the opportunity to participate and submit in a proposal specifically to the Department of Education to participate was one that we couldn't turn down. So we went through all of the different processes that the Department of Ed required and submitted the proposal. And in 2020, we became one of the institutions, actually the only institution that was selected in the state of Wisconsin to participate in the second round of the Second Chance Pell program. No. Yeah, sorry, Peter. So during that particular time, it's allowed us really to be engulfed in this landscape and really understanding the impact that prison education has on students, and being able to transform lives, being able to create an opportunity for sustainability once those that are incarcerated basically are released out into basically society. So it connects us as far as to our passion overall. And it reminds me of the first time I attended one of our graduations for prison education programming, and coming back from the actual graduation, I had to pull over to the side of the road because it was at that moment where I realized the true connection to the work that we do. So being in higher education and being in the financial aid landscape for 20 plus years, it's allowed me in a sense to see truly this method, this opportunity in a sense to be something that can be a second chance or hope or inspiration to those who want to better themselves and say, hey, my life isn't wasted because of a decision that happened in the past. So I'm very, very happy and excited to be with you on today and to be able to share my insight in relation to this topic.
This is a recorded session of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest, held the week beginning September 17th, 2023 in Madison. More to come after these messages.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Don't let by
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer.